Welcome to Agency Highway. This is a podcast for digital agencies and freelancers who want to grow their business, earn more, and work less. Each episode, you'll hear from agency owners that are killing it, meet epic people that can help you along your journey, or just listen to me ramble on about something I think is cool. Head to agencyhighway.com for transcripts, action notes, and to join the community. I'm your host, James Rose. Now, let's get into it. This podcast is brought to you by Content Snare. Content Snare helps digital agencies get content from their clients on time, in the right format, without email. If you've ever needed to get content from clients, you'll know how painful it can be. You end up constantly chasing them for weeks and months, and by the time it's ready, there's a 900-long email trail full of massive images and a couple of brochures from 6 years ago. Content Snare makes this a thing of the past by collecting content from your clients in the right format the first time and does all the chasing for you. Try it on your next project by signing up at contentsnare.com. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Agency Highway. I've got Andre Gagnon on the line today, who you may know as the founder of ProjectHuddle.io, which is an epic tool for collecting clients' design feedback. And we have been a customer for, I'm not even sure how long. I think our renewal just came up, so it must be just over a year. And it's an epic tool. I know so many people that talk a lot of good things about it. It comes up in the Facebook group all the time. So it's really awesome to have you on, Andre. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, yeah, I want to hear a little bit about your story. I was going to do an intro, but as usual, I would butcher it. So why don't you tell us where you started from agency life and through, obviously, I've heard a little bit about it now, into freelancing and how you got started.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I started an agency, actually, and ended up getting fired from my job. And when I got fired, I didn't have any clients yet. So I had a lot of time on my hands. So I just decided, maybe I should build some WordPress themes. I heard about this site that I think many people know called ThemeForest. It was brand new at the time. This is back in maybe 2009, 2010. So I built a theme and released it, and it did really well. So I think it was like perfect timing because it wasn't even that great a theme. And so I just kept building themes and sort of got into the product side of things at the same time as client work. And
then, yeah, nice. It's like getting into apps, like when apps first came out, there's this guy, Joel Com, I think his name. He's the guy that did that fart app. I don't know if you remember it, but it was like a $2 or whatever. And it just had like 7 buttons for different fart noises. And the dude made $1 million out of it. You're like, really? That's really?
The timing is so important, and you can't even try and time things. It's just luck, I think. You know, at least it was for me.
I think that's pretty true of a lot of business stuff, though, right? Like, it's just being in the game for long enough for that luck to come around. You know, like, almost everyone's had some level of luck and timing or whatever. So, yeah, don't downplay it. It's just, yeah, it's anyway. How did Theme Forest go? You had just the one theme, or?
Yeah, well, I ended up with like 8 or 9, I think, right now. But it was just me when I started. A lot of these other people maybe hired teams and started building. Because it was, at that time, you release a theme, it does well. It's just as fast as you can build them.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't realize that, so I was just sort of taking my time and thinking I was like really awesome and then everybody caught on, and now it's like this. I think they're releasing like 100 themes a day or something on ThemeForest now, or something ridiculous like that.
Wow, that's crazy!
So it's getting super saturated. So it's and a lot of them honestly are like a lot better than mine and stuff.
Yeah. Are you still on ThemeForest?
I'm still on ThemeForest. Yeah, I'm just doing like maintenance and compatibility stuff with themes, and you know. A lot of people are still using, which is kind of cool. Like they was the time from 2009. So.
Yeah, no, I was just like, I better ask before I shred it. I was just having a while back, I wrote an article about the few reasons we don't use ThemeForest anymore. And for a while, we were ranking on page one for the word ThemeForest. And it was
no way.
We had so much traffic, and it was like,
8 reasons we never use Theme Forest, and it was like number 7 or 8 on the front page if people search Theme Forest. I was like, oh my gosh, like I was waiting for a cease and desist. but wow. Yeah, but like, and honestly though, there is a lot of stuff on Theme Forest that's fine. It's just like there's a lot of stuff that's not, and what a lot of people do is go and end up buying like X Theme or whatever, these like massive things that are just full of bloat. And like it causes problems down the line, but you know, I'm not saying that that's the problem with everything, but yeah, that's the only reason we stopped using it. But it's so cool that you were on that, you got to ride that wave.
Yeah. I mean, that's not an uncommon story of buying a theme on Theme Forest and being disappointed or whatever. So I think there's something there, but you know, there are some decent ones on there. Okay. And I think, you know, they're cheap. So it's like what you get what you pay for. Is that the
same? Yeah, sure. That's it.
Yeah. So, at least from my perspective, it was getting to a point where I didn't feel like I wanted to compete anymore in that space. So
yeah,
I learned quite a bit about, WordPress along the way and product stuff, which is kind of cool. And, so I started doing some more client work again, because that's always fun, doing some cool and neat projects for people, and doing some custom stuff again. You know, having the knowledge of building WordPress themes, you kind of have a different perspective on client sites and things. So
right. So had you learnt all about, you know, were you a developer for that agency? Is that how you got started?
Yeah. So I majored in art. So I didn't have any experience developing or anything. So when I worked at the agency, they wanted to do some websites, and so they paid me to learn. The first site I did was absolutely terrible. I don't think it exists now anymore, which is a good thing. But I got better each time I did it. And I think that's like one of my life lessons that I always tell myself is you don't have to be like the best right away, but as long as you keep improving, you can get better and better. And that's
absolutely, and I think it's pretty important to have a commitment to that as well. Like there's it's almost like got to be part of your weekly thing to spend some time learning new stuff, and not necessarily by screwing up client sites. It's
that's like I don't know if you heard that Bob, you know who Bob Ross is?
No.
Painter. He's an American thing. He's like a painter. He's on PBS in the 80s. And he would always say, talent is pursued interest. So it's not like you just have talent. You have to pursue an interest, and as you pursue it, better.
Yeah, and be researching and learning new stuff. Absolutely. And I think that was a while ago, I wrote a blog post about getting web design clients, and it's, you know, one of our most popular posts. And one of the parts in there I was talking about was not sucking, basically, because there's so many web developers out there that straight up suck, even big agencies, right? Like they have this nice shiny exterior and it looks like they're some fancy design agency. And I was talking to one the other day, and some of their processes and the way they build sites absolutely blew my mind. We were talking, you know, a 10-person team, and they were building sites worse than many freelancers that I know. And so my point really was that sometimes all you have to do is not suck to stand out. And that was our thing when we were doing agency life. It was pretty much like, in fact, our tagline was web developers that don't suck. The full thing was web developers that respond to emails, finish the job, and don't suck, because everyone I spoke to had one of those three problems with their web developer. So. You know, I was like, just so by being better at your job, it also gives you more confidence to, you know, in meetings and all that sort of stuff. This is kind of sidetracking now, but it's a thing I'm
super interesting,
passionate about.
Yeah.
If you can't tell. But look, so the main topic that we should probably dig into now is client feedback, because obviously that is what Project Huddle is all about. So, from, you know, it's a self-hosted WordPress plugin that enables you to get feedback on both image designs and live websites, which is freaking awesome. Some people would be familiar with Envision and all that, and this is, we'll get into the story of Project Huddle soon, but let's talk about client feedback and the lessons you've learned especially like when you were in the agency and then afterwards?
Yeah, good question. And I should preface this in that I am no means like an all-encompassing expert. I just made a lot of mistakes. So I'm going to tell you about these mistakes now. So you don't.
I think that's normal though, right? Like that's how pretty much everything happens is out of this, like you realize you screwed these things up and go, I'm going to do this better next time.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's, I think with anything, it's anything you're learning, you're never like, it's never perfect. You know, you just keep getting better each time. And I think client communication is one of those things you just improve over time. And it's never something that can be absolutely perfect because it's people and people aren't perfect. but one of the things that I think when I was first starting out, especially when I didn't have any work, I didn't pre-qualify anybody. I just assumed that everybody would be a great client and they'd be a great fit for me. And I assumed that I needed to land and close every single deal that was placed in front of me. Like,
yep.
If I didn't, a bad designer, a bad developer, or whatever. But I think now, having learned those mistakes and partner with some bad clients, it's a two-way street. And you know, a client and a designer, developer relationship is, I think, no different than a personal relationship. You know, it's like two people meet. And they go on a date, and the date is basically they're pre-qualifying each other to make sure it's going to be a good fit. And why shouldn't we do that, you know, in business to make sure that we're both going to be happy with the relationship?
Nice. I like
that. So I didn't do that. Ended up with some bad fits. And it's not necessarily they were bad clients. It was just – it was my fault, you know, that I didn't take that responsibility.
Yeah. And look, I think we all have, everyone's got that story, right? Of a bad client. And sometimes even when you are qualifying, like I've been completely wrong sometimes where I've had a client who seems just so chill and the whole, like I figured the whole process was going to be super relaxed because she was, and then she became our, you know, classic client from hell, and that client that ruins an entire, not even month, like 2 months of other projects because you constantly want like dreading the next email from her. We all have had that and they can still slip through, but it's definitely something to think about. Like, and I see so many people that are just saying yes to everything, but people are definitely cottoning on. At least that's what I see in the Facebook group.
Agreed. And maybe a good skill to have is, you know, knowing how to when and how to fire a client if things go bad, you know, and separate in a way that's like you said, you didn't just disappear and all that, you know, that there's you have some kind of process for that.
Yeah, for sure. And trying to leave on like a amicable, is that the right word? An amicable way, because there's always the chance that they might refer, like just because the relation, like, as long as the relationship hasn't gone sour and you're getting like saying no or whatever early, you can be like, you can basically do it in a nice way that they still leave with a positive feeling and may refer you. I actually read a post from Jennifer Bourne, which I'll put in the show notes the other day. And she was talking about rejecting work, but never leaving them with nothing. So actually giving them some information, maybe some blog posts or whatever, and being, so you could template this, you know, and then they're going to be like, oh, wow, like she was so generous, even though she didn't want to work with us. And then, you know, so that could lead to referrals. I really like that.
Yeah, that's great. I'll have to read that one. I think like that's one of the things I think that makes running an agency smoother is just having systems for everything. And people always think, I think about systems for like the positive systems, like, you know, landing clients, but they never think about like the negatives, like how to let down a client or, you know, how to fire a client.
Absolutely.
For those two, you know, for worst case scenarios.
Yeah, that's, you know what? I haven't even thought of that. That's a really good point. Like,
well, I just made it up right now. So.
Brilliant.
So maybe make sure it's a good idea first, but.
No, I think that is definitely something to think about. Because especially if you can leave it positive, even though it's a negative situation, like that's cool. So back on client feedback, what other mistakes did you make?
Yeah, so I guess, I just want to dive more into pre-qualifying because the other mistake is I knew I needed to pre-qualify, but I didn't know what questions to ask, what I was looking for. And, you know, a lot like dating, it takes practice. Like the first person you date is probably not going to be the person, I mean, for most people.
Yeah.
Going to be with for forever or whatever. So I think it came down to defining some core values, which sounds like super cliche and sounds like a business, like corporate business thing, but figuring out what my values are and making sure that they have the same values. You can find that out through questions or asking about previous experiences and stuff. So
yeah.
Like mine are, I like people who are authentic, are willing to give and accept feedback, have a bias towards action and iteration. So they're rather than paralysis by analysis, they like to put on a version one and then a version 1.1. You know, it's not like an all or nothing. Practice reasonable availability with each other and thinking bigger than competitors were sort of my top, what is it, 6, 5, 5.
And so how did you work this stuff out in those initial meetings? Like how did you have certain questions you would ask, or were these just like feelings that you got?
Yeah. So they're more feelings, I think, because you can't, I guess with dating, you can't ask somebody like, what are your 5 core values or like,
yeah, but you could talk about competitors like for that last one, right?
Of course, you could
sort of bring up other topics that would help get that information out of them.
Yep, of course. And I think like explaining what my values are and not necessarily listing them, but just telling them about me and things I like to do, I can talk about values in there. Like then there's sort of an expectation of like they know what I expect of partners and stuff. So I think it's a good conversation to have from the beginning.
Did you do anything around trying to get clients to trust you as the designer? So that, because I know Christine Thatcher, who's another person I'll drop in the notes, she's from Designing to Delight. And I'm pretty sure that's one of her big things in her course is that conversation early so that the client really trusts you to get you on the same page. So there are very minimal revisions. Did you do much around that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think providing some value and expertise early, I mean, this is my method. I'm sure hers might be better than mine, but explaining like, if you're going through a case study, explaining design decisions and results and things and, learning how to communicate design in a way that's not based on taste, I think is a big one. Like, something doesn't look cool, it's successful because it converted and et cetera, I think helps.
Yeah.
But if it's almost like that's something you got to figure out ahead of time, because maybe this client is not trustworthy of any partner usually. And they like to be the kind of person that micromanages and handholds and really just wants somebody with a mouse that they can move your hand around the screen.
Yeah. They want a monkey basically. Yeah. And that is, just sometimes, because we've definitely done work for that kind of person and I was totally okay with it because it was easy for me. I didn't even need to get involved. I just outsourced it straight to my team. Mm-hmm. And it was just a matter of like, yeah, this is what they want. We designed it up. They're definitely not an ideal client if you are trying to show them that your design skills and conversion skills are going to make a better website for their business, right?
And again, it comes down to values. I mean, if you're happy with that kind of client, at least you'd know ahead of time. But I like trying to figure that out is a little tough. So I like to ask them if they have any previous experience with a designer and developer and why they might have left or why it didn't work out. Because that's something you can ask in business, but you can't ask personal. If you're on a date, you can't say, so why did you leave your ex or whatever?
No, I think that's a great question to ask because depending on what they say, it might be pretty obvious that the problem is on their end rather than...
For sure.
If they've gone through 6 web developers and they say they all suck, then... Yep.
It's hard to find a good one, et cetera, et cetera. It's like maybe the problem isn't them. It's not all 5.
Absolutely. So you mentioned case studies there, like as you're going through case studies to show them, why certain design decisions were made. Is this something you're doing early in the process?
When I first started out, that's not what I was doing because I didn't have any any projects, but later on, I got into like an e-commerce sort of track where I did a lot of e-commerce, WooCommerce, Shopify sites. And those were like super interesting because I didn't have anything official like a case studies page or anything, but I could either sit down with the client or explain like what the things we did in relation to like what their needs were. So,
so this is retrospective. This is actually showing them the design and saying these are why these decisions were made, or are these other examples?
These are other examples. So right. These are like other projects that I've done or we've done or whatever.
Right.
That and explaining design decisions and and why it was successful. You know, maybe some poor decisions and what they shouldn't do would be another thing to do. At least authenticity is one of my values. So I'm fine sharing that with clients. You know, failures and stuff too. So.
Yeah, nice. Cool. So is any other lessons from client feedback like that you've learned along the way?
So I guess I've kind of have like three steps.
Okay.
I guess
that sounds good. Let's get into that.
But we're talking about pre-qualifying, and I think one thing we didn't touch on with pre-qualifying is I always like to identify if there's a budget or find out what kind of budget there is.
Definitely.
That's like a super important question to ask that I think needs to be asked no matter what. The other one is to make sure that their needs match your skills. Don't try and like fit something together just because you like them or whatever. Make sure that it's something that you're going to be able to deliver on.
Yeah.
So the accountability goes both ways. So the second step, so the three steps are pre-qualify and then communicate during the design process. And then when they're done, what the design is nurturing the client or have like a continual relationship. So the reason why I kind of have that as the last step is the communication part is like so key, especially in the first project that you work on, that if you do other projects, you sort of have your communication down, your communication style, just like a relationship. Like, when you first start out, you got to communicate or the relationship will make it. But once you grow together, you kind of know how to communicate together and you know what works and what doesn't. So,
yeah. So is this like, after the project or is this in future projects with them?
So the communication part is like during the project.
Yeah.
And then after the project is over, it doesn't mean the communication is done, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right.
So I can't remember where I heard this somewhere. You can't over communicate with a client. And I like that because if they got like how many people email a client every day with like the status of the project, like almost nobody.
Yeah.
But if you did, like imagine that from a client's perspective, like this guy's on it. Even if you think it's done, I know what's going on because it's especially with a new relationship, it's a huge risk. They're either handing you a bunch of money up front or trusting their brand in your hands. And they want to make sure that you're doing something, at least thinking about it. So,
yeah. And I've heard this a bunch lately, actually. Like, it's enough times where I'm like, I'm definitely taking notice now, right? With the constant communication. Like Laura Elizabeth from Client Portal talks about it, and Jennifer Bourne definitely does. Jennifer has like a client management system. That's what her course is all about. In sort of automating even the communication in the beginning, where it might just be every week a couple of emails go out that are sort of they're actually automated and say stuff like this is where we'll be up to in the process and might have some information for them to read, some blog posts or something. Laura talks about a no update, so even if nothing's changed because maybe they're waiting on content or waiting on something, they write them an email just to sort of check in. So communication is massive and it's something that's very easy to slip behind on because we've definitely done this in the past, right? Where we're building a site and we're just doing our thing. And then I realized 3 weeks had gone past and I haven't sent anything to the client.
Oh yeah.
And so they're like, what's going on? Like I haven't heard from the guy in ages. He disappeared like my last guy. So it's, yeah, having some time set aside in your process and actually making it part of your process, whether that's like a weekly event in your calendar, that's like one way you can do it, or reminders in the project management system to actually check in with your clients, like at least once a week.
Is that what you do? You do reminders and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm big on time blocking. That's one of my favorite productivity techniques, where I literally just have like a time block each week. We're not doing much agency stuff anymore, but yeah, like putting aside a few hours a week or certain days where that's the theme of the day, right? So like Friday might be like client management or client relationship day. So now for Content Snare, that means I actually reach out to some of the most active users of Content Snare and find out what their, you know, the things they like the most and the things they change. The thing I'm like, I say, what do you like the most and what would you change? And the feedback from the first one is really good on writing copy and you know, knowing what to focus on when I talk about Content Snare. And then the second one is great for knowing what to fix. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but it also is making people go like, holy crap, you have great customer service.
That's awesome. I love that idea. That's like devoting a time block really works well, I think. And that was a mistake I didn't make or that I made when I was starting out was, I didn't think about the communication part, and I assumed that being a designer and developer just meant I would just build stuff, and then when I was done, I'd shoot it over, and they'd say, "Yay, you're awesome," and then everything would be great. But as I grew in my career, I realized that I would say half of my job is communicating, and the other half is being a designer and developer. And I think that's the whole reason is because, especially as a freelancer, when I was freelancing, I didn't have like an account manager or somebody to give updates to. So I, if you think about it, an account manager is like an entire role at an agency, entire salary, entire career for somebody. It's super important to an agency. Why isn't it super important to a freelancer? So, and you know, going back to the relationship analogy, poor communication is the number one reason couples split up. So
yeah,
if you're totally still on board with that analogy, I think it works in business too.
Yeah, nice. Hey, I'm just going to pause the recording here for a second because I can smell something really funny. And I just want to make sure something's like not on fire. Oh, yeah, you know, all good. I just that would have plagued my mind, and it would have like made me like distant in the room. Like,
what if there were flames behind you, I would tell you.
It smelled almost like an electrical fire or something.
What is it?
No idea. Yeah. So this is all really awesome stuff. I think that is applicable to pretty much any design business. Now I want to dig into Project Tuttle. Just a little bit about sort of how you got started and what it's all about. I can obviously jump in places too and sort of back up how good it is because we use it. But yeah, like tell us a bit about Project Tuttle.
Yeah, happy to. So when I was freelancing, I'd talking about this communication issue, you know, there's a lot of tools out there to help with communication and they're really great. Like Envision is the biggest one I think people know about. But there was nothing like self-hosted. So I call SaaS fatigue. I had all these SaaS microservices that were helping with my business, but the costs were really starting to add up. If I decided I wanted to switch services or I didn't want to pay for the service, I didn't have access to any of my data anymore, which is gone. So I decided to make something self-hosted, like a self-hosted version of Envision and Bughard and these other tools that I could use myself and customize and have my own brand, my own website. And, you know, at the same time, this is a time when WordPress was changing into more of has an API and an app platform and has all these cool back-end components to it. So it was kind of a challenge to myself, too, to see what was possible. So built Project Tuttle for myself, basically.
Good way to start.
Exactly. Decided I was going to eat my own dog food, so started using it with clients and, you know, iterating on it. And eventually it's where it is today. And now, you know, you can get feedback on designs as well as live websites and even sites that are not WordPress, you can connect. So if you, you know, do something else like a Squarespace site or a Shopify site or something, you can use Project Tuttle on that too. So.
Yeah, but you still obviously need to install it on your own WordPress. Yeah, I love the tool. It's like so simple to use. I personally have it set up on a subdomain, on a clean WordPress install. Is that how you recommend people do it, or do people put it on their own site as well?
People do both, but I like the subdomain the best because you can kind of craft a client portal for projects specifically, rather than have like the agency storefront and everything on one installation.
You could have looked for the client portal.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Laura's client portal, because that whole thing, they could come into their client portal and then have links out to, it might be like their content forms on Content Snare, which she talks about. It could be their Project Huddle links, and then it's their actual deliverables. So, yeah. And I think the other thing there too is it reduces the chance of conflicts, because there's always the chance that like someone's using a crappy plugin that's going to interfere with what you're doing.
Of course. And really it makes sense, because your storefront, you want some aggressive caching, you know, it's very static content usually.
Yeah.
And something like Project Huddle is changing, you know, every time you add a comment, there's new data. So
yeah,
you know, there is a conflict there sometimes. So, definitely better to have in a subdomain, I
think. Yeah, and it's so easy to do now, right? Like with most hosting, you can fire up a new WordPress install like that and have it set up in no time at all. Like I remember when we set it up, it was pretty much a couple of clicks, set up the subdomain, install Project Huddle, and that was it. Like that was pretty much it.
And it's super cheap, because it's not like you have a lot of traffic. You know, it's just usually one or two people on the site at a time. So yeah, you can choose some cheap hosting and, you know, get it up and running really fast.
Yeah. I'm personally a fan of Cloudways for that kind of stuff. Where
yeah, man. Dude, I discovered Cloudways and I was blown away. So it's by far my favorite host. And, you know, I was a WP Engine fan. They're still great, but
yeah.
And I'm not affiliated with them at all. I'm just recommending them.
Well, I will be putting an affiliate link in the show notes.
Might as well.
Yeah, but look, if I'm being honest, their support isn't great, but for the price, it's kind of crazy. Normally, all I do is your lighting just went crazy.
I think it's on a timer.
Yeah, but sometimes I've had to like close down their support just because I'm like, this guy has no idea, so I've just closed it and reopen it and get a new guy, and it's usually fine. Yeah,
but you're definitely right. It's for a different kind of person. You do a little bit more of your own troubleshooting and managing.
Yeah.
Whereas like Kinstar, WP Engine or something would sort of take care of it for you. So,
yeah, I know that's what you're paying for, right? So you can do this, please. Yeah. yeah, awesome. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about Project Huddle? I think or what makes it different, or I mean, we've already spoke about what makes it different because it's self-hosted. Yeah, I mean, and I really like, so there's a lot of design tools that I've used in the past would only work on like images or something, whereas this one we specifically wanted for live websites always, because we'd finish the website and then we'd ask for feedback. And what we used to do was say, can you just send a dot point list of everything you want done? And that was like, well, what changed or fixed? And that was painful as, because it's very hard for them to go, you know, because we did two rounds of revisions too. So we'd say, make sure it's all in one, whatever. And then they'd try to describe things and it was always hard. But now they can literally just like click on the thing that they don't like or they want changed, type it in, hit a button, and we can even have a discussion right there. And then they send an email or whatever to be like, this is our first round, everything that's in there now. And then we just repeat the process for round two.
Yeah. I think the most, because we do surveys and the most common way people get feedback is typically email, which I think is the worst because it's so asynchronous. It's all in different places. You get multiple emails and, you know, I think it's the same thing with getting content, you know, content's there, you get, you know, different formats, different things, different people jumping in. Nobody's all on the same page.
Yeah.
It's by far the worst.
Really easy to miss stuff if there's more than a few emails, right? Yeah, like and then sometimes there'll be one line like right before the signature and your brain just like automatically skips over it or whatever. And we've had that happen before where there was an entire it was a template website and they totally changed the template before we started the job, completely missed it. And it was like a huge stuff around.
It's crazy. And I think you're exactly right. You miss stuff. And I'm from the clients and they don't remember what they sent you half the time. So when the invoice comes, sometimes this is a surprise, or when you say it's going to cost more money than we originally anticipated because of all these changes, they don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
You have a system for it where they can see every little thing that they're asking you, then it's a little bit easier for them to understand why you might need to charge more or why
projects
change and that kind of thing.
Are you able to push those the feedback into project management tools at all?
Yeah, so that's sort of the next phase we're working on right now.
Nice.
It's and people that have already done this, it's if you're a developer and you're familiar with custom post types and custom post meta, you can sort of take these posts and connect to whatever thing you want.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of hooks that fire when, you know, people leave new comments and things, and we have developer documentation. So people have kind of done it on their own to integrate with some systems they're using, but we're going to sort of be rolling out some more popular ones as well as Zapier and some other things.
Yeah. Well, you could actually use Zapier with a new post type right now, I assume. I haven't tried it, but.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't tried it.
When there's a new post created or something of a certain post type, and then you could probably filter based on like what the status of it is or something, and then fire it out into whatever tool you wanted. I want to play around with that now.
Yeah, me too. Maybe you can already do it, but that's sort of the plan, is to sort of integrate with stuff.
Yeah, nice. And,
you know, everybody, that's, I think, more segmented part of what people do is so many different project management systems are all probably really great.
Mm.
So it's like, where do you start, I think?
Yeah, well, you start with Zapier. That's where you start.
That's what I think, yeah.
I honestly, like, I think every business owner needs to know more about Zapier. I'm actually in the process of planning out a course now, which is going to be difficult because it's like the concepts of Zapier, you kind of need to understand development. So if people don't, then it's going to be hard to kind of teach. But most of the time I don't even use built-in integrations anymore. I always want to use Zapier so I can format however I like, you know, in that Zap, and then move it over to the project management system in the exact format that I want it.
Exactly. You're not forced into something.
Yeah. And so I'm a huge fan of that, but we get asked for integrations all the time for different tools with Content Snare. And I'm just like, we're just going to do Zapier to start with, right? Because it opens up so many doors. I mean, even webhooks, right? If you can have an outbound webhook, you can catch that with Zapier and do whatever, but then that's why I want to teach people to do that, because that when you know how to do that, it opens up so many integrations with stuff.
Yeah, for sure. It's so powerful. And I've tried to use it a couple of times, and where I would always get stuck is like data wouldn't match exactly the format you need for another service. So then you have to do some sort of data manipulation with it.
Yeah. Which isn't actually that hard if you know what you're doing. You know, there's even an email. This is totally off topic, but there's an email parser tool as well. So if you have an email, a system that sends out emails, or that can send out an email that's always in the same format. For example, if Project Huddle would email you and say, task, blah, 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 like it had set fields every time, there's a tool with Zapier that can actually parse that and pull out all the data, and you can use that Yeah.
That'd be super easy. I mean, Project Huddle already sends out a bunch of emails, so
there you go.
Email templates, essentially.
I only discovered that yesterday because I'm going through the Zapier consultant accreditation process at the moment. I was like, wait, what? I didn't know about this. Probably should have, but
maybe I should talk to you about some Zapier stuff, I guess.
Oh man, I love Zapier. I could talk about it all
day. No affiliation.
Well, I don't even have a bloody affiliate system, and no affiliation yet. I want to be, but anyway, we're getting way off track, but
that's all right.
Yeah, this has been great, man. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I'll ask my final couple of questions if you are ready.
I think I'm as ready as I can be.
All right, sweet. So what would you go back and tell Mini Andre just starting out?
Just starting out, I would tell Mini Andre to probably quit my job earlier.
Yeah.
Before I got fired. long story short, that was a lesson I learned where if you don't make decisions for yourself, other people will make them for you.
Wow.
So I like to live by that mantra too. Maybe I have too many mantras. I don't know.
No. Favorite piece of technology right now?
Oh man, this is a tough one. I've actually been really into all the static site stuff, like the Jamstack, and I haven't used any projects, you know, doing that stuff, but doing a lot of JavaScript development is super exciting.
Like, yeah, right. You
have these super performant sites just straight out of the box.
Yeah, awesome. Well, there you go. Where would you like to send people to find out more about you?
You can connect with me on Twitter if you want. That's a great spot. I'm on there occasionally, and then you can check out projecthuddle.io.
Of course. Yep.
Of course.
Sounds
good. Those would be the two.
Yep. Well, we'll drop those in the show notes. What's your handle on Twitter? We should probably do that.
I should change that too. It's AJ and my last name Gagnon, which is Gagnon.
All right, AJ.
But you might want to put that one in the notes.
Yes, definitely. Awesome. Well, Andre, thank you again for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be on.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Agency Highway, please head over to iTunes and leave a review or share it with someone you think will get something out of it. And I'll see you in the next episode.
Discover how to grow your agency, earn more, and work less at agencyhighway.com. Head over there to get resources from this episode and full transcripts. See you next time. This episode was brought to you by Content Snare. If you're a digital agency or just need to get content or info from your clients, Content Snare can help you collect it on time and without enormous email trails. Give it a try at contentsnare.com.